like this works. But I mean, that's one of the things. It's part of the gentrification cycle that killed Soho in New York. Was, you know, all the artists went in there, made it the crazy Andy Warhol part of town, and then all the rich people moved in and said, "What's with all these crazy Andy Warhol people that they moved there to be near in the first place?" And turns out they're pretty late. You know, they're pretty noisy at 2 a.m., which is part of that Andy Warhol lifestyle. And then I don't know, it's a thing. So yeah, you got to make sure you got these rules out the gates in the first place, and make sure that the kinds of businesses that attract the kind of crowds that you want are located in a space that doesn't disrupt the neighborhood. It's a lot of planning in advance. You got to get people who've seen villages die and who understand the history of villages to be able to develop it from the first place, including things like bylaw and ordinances and policies around what goes where, and even just garbage collection, because that's one of the things they say is killing the village in New York, is the garbage collection. That part of town is just hot mess garbage. So people are going out to the Bronx where Queens, or at least it's clean. So it's little things like that can go a long way.
And people are willing to travel. You know,
Absolutely.
we were recently at what turned out to be the only dim sum in the entire state of Vermont.
Okay.
We happened to stop by a dim sum place in Burlington, and he was like, "Yeah, we are the only dim sum in the whole state.
Okay.
And if you want dim sum not from here, you either drive to Montreal, cross an international border for dim sum, or go all the way to the city of New York, New York, New York." And that's a lot of commitment for dim sum that I'm not personally prepared for.
If the Char Siew Bao is good enough, I would travel 3 hours each way.
That is fair. We didn't have that. We had other dim sum, but it looked good. It was the guy that made it. I had a pot sticker, and you could taste.
Pot stickers are Japanese. You had a haga.
Whatever, whatever. I had a dumpling, and you could taste each of the spices. Like, you could tell that the guy hand ground spices to put into this dumpling.
Oh, that sounds more like a Char Siew Bao. I used
It was
to,
divine.
yeah, I was a, until I discovered that gluten is poison to me, I was definitely a dim sum guy.
But my point is that a lot of people do travel for it, but
Oh,
will
yeah.
people travel to a artificially constructed gay village? That's a question that only Detroit can answer. Now,
We'll find out.
where the gays live and what the gays do is the subject of more study, this time by the US Census. They released a study by authors Mary Jones Myers and Lydia Anderson looking at where gay folks are living in the US. Of course, the big study came out. Now, some of the initial data is coming back. The big finding seems to be that both the gays and the lesbians are primarily focused in large urban areas. We all know this. It's where the
Surprise.
villages are. But what's really interesting is that the lesbians appear to be in a far higher frequency in smaller towns and communities compared to gay men. So there's more gay men in big urban centers, and the lesbians are hanging out in all your little small villages. Like, that seems to be where they are.
Not just the small villages, but think of like a state that you don't know much about, like, I don't know, like South Carolina. The largest city in South Carolina is going to have more gay men than most of the other places, but a lot of the gay men in South Carolina might just go to Atlanta, which is not that far away, and it is a major urban center. Whereas you're going to get a lot more sort of the rest of the LGBTQ, other than the gays, sort of going, "This is a big city. This is big enough for me. I'm gonna just stay here. Don't need to go to Atlanta. You know, Chattanooga. What's wrong with Chattanooga? What's wrong with Baton Rouge? You know, big enough. St. Louis. You know, stick around San Diego. Don't have to go to San Francisco."
We have the top 10. The top 10 overall: New York, obviously, Chicago, San Francisco, Phoenix, Fort Lauderdale, Houston, Seattle, Palm Springs, San Diego, and Riverside County. For women, it includes Brooklyn, obviously. Alameda County, California, specifically Oakland and Berkeley, Clark County, Las Vegas, Bexar County, and San Antonio. The really interesting thing is in San Francisco, almost 6% of the population is gay male couples.
Mm-hmm.
It is the highest single concentration of gay male couples is in San Francisco. The female equivalent, the highest concentration of all the lesbians, where would you guess all the lesbians are? Specifically, they make up almost 4% of all couples in this area.
Portland.
No.
Was that a good guess?
It was a good guess. In fact, yeah, Multnomah County, Oregon, i.e. Portland, was the runner-up with almost 3% of
them. Ah, suburb of Portland. You got me there. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, it is.
It's interesting. Fort Lauderdale and Palm Springs was on there, but Miami was not.
Yeah. It's the Berkshires.
Yeah, it's a curveball from Florida.
It's the Berkshires in Hampshire, Massachusetts. Which is where all the lesbians are. They're all in Massachusetts, in the state of MA.
In New England, yeah.
Yeah, they're all the lesbians are in New England. Like, that's clearly what the solution is.
So really what you're saying is that lesbians are attracted to temperate weather.
Yeah. The gays are either in San Francisco or, shocker, Washington, D.C., second highest concentration
very gay
of homosexuals.
Series. Yeah.
And all the lesbians are in the Berkshires and Portland. Also, not overly surprising information for anyone at all. But I was wondering, because I remember we were at Pride in Ottawa recently, and I said to Jake, this is the largest number of lesbians that I, as a gay man, has seen in a while. Like, where do the lesbians go? So, Sebastian.
Yes.
Where are the lesbians of Canada? I want our listeners to also let us know, at Talk Queer, where would what's the Portland of Canada? Where is the lesbian mecca of Canada? I want to say, like, Kenora.
You know what I mean? My guess.
Yeah.
Because Canada is so big and interprovincial movement is not as common as it is interstate in the States. People tend to broadly stay within their provinces. Although I would say the prairies sort of make a larger mass. So Alberta and Saskatchewan, you get a little bit more movement between them than most places. But definitely in Ontario, you know, gay men live broadly in Toronto. And for lesbians, my guess would actually be London, Ontario, or Guelph.
I was going to say Regina. I thought all the lesbians would be in Regina, but I don't know.
Because of what it rhymes with? Come on.
I know. It was a cheap joke. But no, I mean, I don't know. I actually think rural, I think BC. I'm leaning towards like Kelowna or, you know, your sort of former hippie belt of BC.
I
think that's where they all ended up. I reckon they're all on Vancouver Island, like all the lesbians. Vancouver.
They're all in Nanaimo.
Yeah, every one of them is in Nanaimo. If there's a lesbian that exists in Canada, they are in Nanaimo. If you're hearing this right now and you're a lesbian, you are in Nanaimo.
Whether you know it or not.
We're broadcast in Nanaimo, and somebody in Nanaimo has heard us. Who is a lesbian? We're talking about you, Sandra.
Thousands of women have just teleported there magically.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a great question. Where would the mecca of lesbians be in Canada? Where would they concentrate? What's the Portland of Canada? I don't know. It's a great question.
Canadian Census collects this kind of information. We should be able, you know, it's probably just going to be like Brantford. It's going to be a suburb of Toronto.
I don't think it's
going to be Orillia. Come on.
Very lesbian. I don't know. I'm not convinced. Now, Kingston, maybe. I can see a lesbian vibe with Kingston.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, well. Speaking of the census, a minister in the Australian government recently shared that they will now be including gender identity in the survey. Last week, we talked about a ongoing kerfuffle with the Australian government, where they had refused to ask the question around sexual orientation and gender identity. This is where we're pulling this data from in the States. Canada's been doing it for a while now. And Australia said, oh, it's too complicated. It's too difficult. People will have to think. And they opted out.
Maybe two questions.
Yeah, there was backlash. They changed their mind on sexual orientation. They've now changed their minds on gender identity. And they said, look, the Australian statistics body will have to figure out these very difficult questions. Mm-hmm. It turns out the Australian statistics gathering body already did. There is a section on the website that details how and what those questions would be and how they would go about them, which really has revealed that it was just the government. It was just the government that hadn't decided what it wanted to do. And the Australian government has now decided that they will ask the questions. And maybe in about 3 years' time, we will know how many gays live in Melbourne in Australia. Or do all the lesbians hang out in Sydney? What is the Portland of Australia?
Oh, I can't remember what it's called. New South
Brisbane?
No, the one in the wine district. Like
in the wine district.
The very temperate rolling hills part of South Australia.
It does sound like lesbian.
The Australian equivalent of living in the north.
We're going to look it up whilst we jump to our next track. This is a great new track by Jilly Wolf. Huge fans. This is Next Life, and we will be back just after this. Welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And Sebastian.
And we're going to... I want to talk about names power of a name. What's really cool is, well, I think it's kind of cool. Anyone can change their name. If you've got a good reason to change your name, change your name. You be you. But I've always thought it was really cool that trans folks, as part of their transition, get to choose their name. They get to be whoever they want to be. They could be Alfonso.
Okay. Yes.
Could be Jeremiah or Geraint or whatever. They could any. Clearly, I'm not very good at coming up with names. I would have a ridiculous name.
When I lived in Hong Kong, a lot of people would take English names because sometimes Cantonese names can be difficult to pronounce. Although every so often you get, like, I knew this one girl named Mei Mei, and she was very stubborn. She's like, "My name is Mei Mei. It's not hard to pronounce. Live with it. I'm not taking an English name." But a lot of the people who did take English names, they would just open an English name book, like flip it to a random page and just point a finger. And then you get a lot of people with like grandma names. Like I knew a Claudia. I knew a guy named Hillary. Hillary was originally a man's name. You get Cynthia's and you get Eleanor's and you get, you know, little spunky 16-year-old girls with like, you know, attitudes, and their names would be
blue.
Like, yeah. It was pretty interesting, but you don't get a lot of Claudias and Cynthias in the trans world.
Not many Gertrudes. Not a huge amount of Gertrude. Now it's worth noting. So the reason why we're talking about it is the UK Deed Poll Office, the British Deed Poll Office, is where you would go to legally change your name. It's the legal name changing bit of government in the UK.
Yep.
That's all you need to know. They looked at about 2,000 recent name changes from trans people in the UK and sort of looked at this information in aggregate to see what does it tell us about specifically trans people choosing new names. For example, about 15% who were most likely to change their names and not have a middle name were aged between 18 and 28. Not apparently a lot of Gen Z, just not fans of middle names.
Oh, you and I both use our middle names.
We actually go by where we're secretly Nick. Secret gay Nick club. I don't know if anyone else is aware of this. Both me and Sebastian, Luke and Sebastian, I'm not called Luke or Sebastian. We're actually both called Nick.
It means that the bank calls me Sebastian, but the government hasn't got the memo that I use my middle name. I have a nephew who's legal on the birth certificate. Middle name is Danger. That was my brother's decision, and my sister-in-law did not approve, but it happened. Middle name is legally Danger.
Middle name is okay. That's giving Archer. Like, it's really giving Archer. All right. That's moving back to trans names.
There is a stereotype that Eli and Quinn makes up about 50% of all trans people.
I mean, that's not statistically accurate. So according to
but you're not saying I'm completely wrong either.
No, not at all. There are definitely some really popular names out there. We're talking about the UK now, in Britain. So in Britain, the most popular trans names for women, women, are Jessica, Emily. I actually saw I looked this up on Reddit as well. People talking about it there, what are the most common names? And someone's like, there's always an Emily. Like, there is always an Emily. And then somebody else commented being like, I think Emily's just a very common name. And I thought, yeah, I personally know about 5 Emilys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many Emilys you know, but there's a lot of Emilys. So, yeah, Jessica's the top one, followed by Emily, then Charlotte, then Alice, rounding it out. And then you get into the sort of witchy vibes, Willow, Luna, Lucy, Freya, Ellie, Alex. They all come and round it out from there. Trans men. Now, it's funny because the most common trans man name is exactly the one that I would have thought of. I'm curious to see if you would pick the most common trans man name in the UK.
Alex?
It's not bad. Alex is second. Alex is the second most common trans man.
Well, the stereotypical English male name is Nigel, but I'm pretty sure there's not there's no Nigels on that list.
It is Noah.
No, oh, of course.
It's a very trans man name, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. About 1.69% of every trans person who changed their name in Britain picked Noah.
I would like, for once, to see a trans man pick the name Agamemnon. Because if you could pick your own name,
Agamemnon,
go for it. Just, you know, all gas, no brakes, like Wheelie Yellow, just out there, flying through the universe. Your selected name for yourself is Agamemnon. Go for it.
Exactly. Now, Alex and Sam's and Chris,
yeah,
your sort of go-to gender-neutral names. Really interesting detail, though, is about 70% of the people who chose their new trans name, the starting letter of their new name did not match their birth name. Yeah. So if their birth name was Sarah, their trans name would not begin with an S.
It would not be Sarah.
With a T or a B or whatever, you know, one of the other 20-odd letters. But yeah, it's really interesting what it says about us. Now, something that was figured out that really should not have been is a Grindr hookup. I wanted to mention this because Virgin Australia, they monitor their crew members, and they fired somebody. So he was, this individual was a crew member for the airline Virgin Australia, and absolutely shattered, like just exhausted, couldn't sleep, couldn't wake, had a early morning flight the next day, just dog tired, and phones up Virgin and says, look, I'm in no shape to be on the crew tomorrow. Can you stick me in an afternoon shift? Go from there. Virgin Airlines says, yeah, sure, no problem. What they do next is they monitor the hallway cameras for the hotel room that this Virgin Airways employee was in. And at 20 past five in the morning, this Virgin Airways employee was like, you know what? I need some company. So that I am able to better fall to sleep, get a few more hours of sleep in, go to work. Well, he was fired for what was defined by Virgin Australia as a social activity. It was a Grindr hookup.
Okay.
But they defined it as a social activity. Courts have now decided that was unacceptable, that was a bridge, that was a bridge too far. But the issue here, the crux of what I'm trying to tell you, is Virgin Airways Australia monitored their cabin crew by camera in the hotel hallway to find that this air crew cabin person had left, brought a friend home, hung out for a while, did some sleep, and then went and worked the afternoon shift as prescribed. You know what I mean? But yeah, invasion of privacy, whatever happens next. But yeah, I thought it was outrageous, and I wanted to share it with you, Sebastian. What's your take on this egregious privacy breach?
I mean, if they fired this crew member for calling in sick without looking into whether or not that's true, because, you know, some places have policies of like, you can't do that. You just show up and then you work. And if you don't show up, then you're no good to us and you lose your job. And there could be a labor dispute there, but that's completely unrelated. The fact that they looked it up to verify, I mean, that's kind of weird. That's not even like if it was insurance fraud or something, you know, companies send out investigators for that kind of thing all the time, but that's a very different beast from just, I am going to work today, I am going to show up at another shift. And if they had said, no, you have to work the morning shift, we can't move you, and then the worker was like, well, I guess I'll just suffer. Then everything was done properly, and that's just a massive invasion of privacy.
Well, Virgin Airways says it was that he breached their fatigue policy and had essentially claimed he was fatigued in order to engage in a social activity, the Grindr hookup.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Fair Work Commissioner in Australia found Virgin to be frankly mystifying, actual quote, saying that it was commonplace for employees to use various apps and that what they do in their private time is their own business and not that of Virgin Airways. Is having some company during a particularly fatigued point in your life a breach of company policy? And a fireable offense? Maybe not.
Yeah.
It was pointed out that if a straight married man were to have sex with his wife after accessing the same leave, it probably would not have been any of their business, according to the commissioner who ruled on the case. Yeah, would your employer monitor the hotel surveillance for your activities, and is that a bridge too far? We will keep an eye on it. There was lots of other stories, lots of international news. We talked about the Dominican Republic. There's a PEP shortage in Australia that's raising a little bit of concern, and concerning numbers on internet partner violence in Cork in Ireland also flagging some concerns there. But yeah, we'll be keeping an eye on that and many other stories as the weeks move on. But for now, we have run out of time. Our last track is Imposter by Bri Isabel, and I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. Thank you for listening.
Canada is there when it seems no one else is. Are you struggling with an LGBT issue? Every day, PFLAG Canada volunteers are contacted by frightened kids and by angry, fearful, or ashamed parents. PFLAG is Canada's only national organization that helps all Canadians who are struggling with issues of sexual orientation and gender identity. PFLAG Canada supports, educates, and provides resources 24/7. Visit pflagcanada.ca.